As you know far too well from listening to Useful Idiots, the 2024 election is coming fast. And while we can't predict for sure which candidate will win, we do know that either way, everyone else in the world will lose. Unless there was a fun and easy way to make a little extra cash on the whole terrible contest. That's right. Betting's not just for sports fans anymore. Now it's the political junkies' time to shine. We figure that if we spend all our time on Twitter anyway, following the election and endless political analysis, why not put our knowledge to the test? It's MyBookie, a new sports book that lets you bet on the 2024 election from the general election down to who will win each state. If the world is crashing anyway, why not cash in? Don't miss out on this. Pick a side, use promo code USEFUL to double your first deposit and instantly start with a leg up, only with MyBookie. Since this is a podcast, you can only hear me right now, but if you could see me, you'd be saying, whoa, who is that? It's me, Katie Helper. I'm just wearing the new fashion line from American Giant. Since 2011, they've been making high-quality, long-lasting, timeless American clothes, including their classic Full Zip, which was named the greatest hoodie ever made by Slate Magazine. Right now, I'm wearing the very stylish Moto dress, perfect for feeling sporty and sleek, made with their soft and stretchy French terry fabric, and Aaron got the roughneck chore jacket, so he's looking good throughout his endlessly busy schedule. From activewear to work fits to the latest fashion picks, American Giant has it all. When most apparel companies have shipped too much overseas, making cheap disposable clothes and creating complicated global supply chains, American Giant stands for simple, local, high-quality goods. It's the kind of difference you'll feel and appreciate for years to come. When you buy American Giant, you create local jobs in towns that help stitch communities together. Get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com when you use the code USEFUL at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code USEFUL. I'm your host, Katie Helper.
And I'm
Matt. I'm your one and only host, Katie Helper. And here I am to introduce my sidekick who's auditioning for the role, Matt Taibbi.
Katie Helper and friends.
Mm-hmm.
And friend.
Yeah, Katie Helper and friend. My one friend, yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm Matt Taibbi, right? That's my one.
I think so. That's who you are this week, right? How are you feeling about being Matt Taibbi, as you asked me the other day about myself?
Well, it's tax day.
I mean, about being Katie Helper, not about being Matt Taibbi.
Right. I don't know how I feel about being Katie Helper.
Yeah. There's a lot to unpack there.
That would be a harder question to answer.
We should very narcissistically just rate how we're feeling about ourselves every week. Are you between 1 and 10? Where are you right now?
Probably a 6.
Oh.
No. How about you?
I still haven't gotten to I don't totally understand the concept, so I'm struggling with it, but
how you're feeling about yourself?
Yeah, I guess. Is it like about myself or about how happy I am in general? I'm in a good mood, I'll say that.
Okay. I mean, that's probably pretty close to what I was asking. I don't know.
Yeah. And Matt, you got your second vaccine?
Yes. Yes. Just got it. So I'm apparently many people get sick after this second shot. So I'm probably, it's going to happen right. Maybe even as we're doing
during this. Yeah.
Could be good.
It could be, yeah. Maybe you can go into anaphylactic shock. Do you have anyone there I should contact?
Just get it. No.
Do you have anyone? You never know. You should. Actually,
have a doctor in the house, so it's okay.
Oh, right, yeah. It's like a robo-doctor. He rents a security guard and a doctor. I'm just kidding. I made that up. Can we reveal? Well, you have 3 kids under the ages of what?
7.
Okay, so I'm not going to say who the doctor is, but Matt has a wife and 3 kids under the age of 7. You do the math.
One of them's a doctor.
One of them's a doctor. We're going to each week, guys, tweet at us, use the hashtag #UsefulIdiotsPod. Tell us who you think the doctor is.
Which person in Matt's house is a doctor? It could be me too.
It could, yeah. I have one in my house right now.
You do?
Yeah.
A medical doctor?
Yeah. I have 2. Excellent. Well, actually, I have 2 doctors. One is a PhD and one is an MD.
So we could both get sick right now and it'd be all right.
It'd be totally fine. Yeah. And then I could also be distracted by some Virginia Woolf, which is what my mom, I gave it away, what the PhD wrote her thesis on.
Ah, okay. Your
her
mom
PhD.
Wrote a PhD on her yeah. PhD thesis on Virginia Woolf?
Yeah, at Columbia.
Huh. Wow.
She was part of that great Jewish working class trajectory from City College to Columbia University. And her passion, she's a novelist and then a journalist. And she actually, we should have her on. We should have all of our parents on.
You should have my dad interview your mom.
Yeah.
That would be like time travel useful idiots, basically.
Yeah. And then my dad is a psychiatrist, so he could like diagnose your mom. And what does your mom do? Or
she's an attorney.
Yeah. Oh, so then she can cross-examine.
Right.
My dad.
So Katie, I have a new ambition in life in my media career, which is that I want Zach and Gavin from the Vanguard podcast, I want them to become the biggest thing on the internet.
Well, not the biggest thing on the internet.
Absolutely. Even bigger. Like
no.
No?
Bigger. They can be our sidekick of a show.
Okay. So it can be Useful Idiots and Friend or Friends.
Right? Friends. But well, only
let's check
two.
In with this to see what they did this week.
Right.
Because
yeah.
They did a thing on Why We Were Fired from Rolling Stone.
Yeah.
And then we did a thing watching them.
Right.
Watching us. And then they did a thing
watching us.
So now we can do a thing watching them, watching us.
Yeah.
So maybe we might be able to, it could be like a time machine or like a Doctor Who plot.
Yeah.
Right? If we keep doing this long enough, maybe we'll get some kind of a chain reaction.
Maybe we'll run into Kurt Loder. How's that for a callback?
Right. What is he again?
He's ageless.
So
we found him. We found photos of him in cave drawings. We found photos of him in, you know, the Stalin drawing. I mean, the Stalin photo. I think I even found him in that
at Yalta, right?
He was. Yeah, right. Yeah.
If we do this enough with the Vanguard.
Yeah, we'll go back in time.
We'll eventually find Kurt Loder.
Yes.
Like the birth of Kurt Loder.
Yeah.
Right. It'll be like Quest for Fire, right? We'll find him like in the earth is a primordial soup kind of a thing.
Right.
And he's walking around.
Ladling.
Bare skin. Yeah, ladling, right? Yes. Well, anyway, we should watch the clip, right?
Yeah.
We were on Useful Idiots, bro. Bro, that was fucking crazy. So for anybody who doesn't
I,
me and Gavin, both of us have been big fucking fans of Useful Idiots, Matt Taibbi's books. You know, obviously, we're doing the fucking Hate Inc. book club right now. And yeah, they fucking pulled one of our clips reacting to Rolling Stone getting canceled, and they actually reacted to it, and it didn't seem like they hated it. So that was awesome.
Yeah, we didn't hate Ink It. We didn't hate Ink It.
Us reacting to them. It was pretty wild, pretty trippy stuff. And what I'm about to do here is going to make it even trippier, because now it's us looking at them, looking at us, looking at them. So
crazy joke going too far.
But this was crazy, guys. I was just chilling last night when this episode dropped, and so I forget who it was, but shout out to whoever hit me up on Twitter.
Yeah,
funniest voices in this, you know, leftist media space.
Great host, one of those people that facilitates great conversations. I love her live streams because it is just kind of like, oh, you know, this is a conversation that I want to be a fly on the wall for.
Yeah, exactly. She's great at facilitating conversations between different voices, interesting voices that you might not expect to see in the same room at the same time, but always makes for a lively discussion. So, you know, huge shout out to Katie Helper and Matt Taibbi. We're so glad that you guys noticed our coverage of Rolling Stone's pulling the plug on Useful Idiots. Of course, we think that's so fucked up. And we also think it was weird that no one else really covered it. So we're glad to be the sole voice, you know, talking about it
in the wilderness. Yeah, so the voices in the wilderness.
Can we try to figure out what's going on here? So right now we're watching
them
on the, they're on the left, right?
Oh
right,
yeah. Now. Yeah. And so when we release this, I don't know where we're going to be. Well, if I don't know how we're going to edit it, but it'll probably be what, us on the sides.
Oh, on the sides.
Unclear.
Wilson, where are we going to be?
I put you on the bottom.
On the bottom.
Okay. So we're looking up. We'll be looking up at them.
This
is like the Brady Bunch. We got to do a Brady Bunch graphic with this. So we're looking up at them. They're looking askance. What is it? Askance at us?
They're looking askance. Sure.
Yeah. Okay. So it's one, two. It's what?
So Dad Mike is in the bottom.
We're gonna have to coordinate with them. Yeah.
We want to look up. We want them probably to look.
Yeah.
Down, or maybe they can look to the, how is it gonna work?
I mean, we can go back to it. I think it's a lot to ask us to memorize it,
right?
And then tell it. I mean, it's a very griot kind of assignment, very oral tradition of telling history. But what we can do is we can go back to it and then email them some screenshots, and then we'll do it that way.
Well, at the very least, yeah, we can do different.
They'll be looking up, down, left, right, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then Bodhi will show up in the center instead of Alice.
Instead of Alice, right, exactly. Yeah. That's a good idea.
Yeah. I like the way they said we were on Useful Idiots. It makes it sound like we interviewed them.
Right, yes.
They could say that they should have that in their bot. You know, it should be like, we've appeared on shows such as, they probably will appear on lots of shows because lots of shows are going to do this. It's such a good thing that they did.
Absolutely.
Like the left watching the left. Shout out to them. I mean, no one else will touch the story of what happened to us, of why Rolling Stone ended things with us.
They're just,
and by the way,
running from it.
Just running from it. Won't touch it with a 6-foot pole. But I got to say something. Our revealing our opposition to starving Yemeni children put that whole thing on the map. And I'm just saying that 80 Democrats and other people, but a lot of Congress people, and our guest, Marianne Williamson, little spoiler alert, signed a letter asking Biden to end the blockade. And you know why that happened. Because we spoke to the plight. We were on the fence and then we got off the fence. And this is why we left Rolling Stone. This is why we quit and ripped up our contracts. Well, I didn't have a contract, but why you ripped up your contract. You stood behind Rolling Stone's chief. You guys didn't see it, but he did the Nancy Pelosi thing. He took his contract and ripped it up.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Performatively.
Yeah. And then he also went like this. He did the clapping behind the guy. Yeah. And when I say the guy, I mean Mohammed bin Salman, because Rolling Stone, we now know, is run by
Saudis. And we like that, right?
No. Well, we did at first because
we did
liked
it first.
Because honestly, I'm going to be real. I never liked the short kid thing. I wanted to speak to your, I wanted to see you. I wanted you to be seen. I wanted to hear your truth. And I wanted to hold the space for you, basically. When you pointed out that, you know, the good thing about the war against Yemen is that short kids, when they're short, they don't bite you in dangerous places.
I was the person who made that observation.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think maybe I mentioned they were short and you were the one who saw the silver lining of it, which is just what you do in life in general. You're like so positive, power of positive thinking. That's Matt Taibbi.
And now you just want to center my concerns.
Yeah. Right? So I was centering your concerns. Yeah. But so we were on the fence about it because I was being an ally to Matt and his appreciation of short children, but I like chubby children, and we could no longer stand by something that was getting in the way of chubby kids. And obviously, just a little aside, obviously we do think this is horrible, which is why we talk about it in general on the show, but we're going to go back to playing the sociopaths who just care about the cuteness factor. But I just think that our raising this issue and our being really vulnerable and saying that it was our saying, no, we will not support the war against Yemen, I think really emboldened people to write this letter to Biden.
You know what it's like? It's like when the Democrats realized finally that there was no need to try to reach across the aisle, that it just wasn't going to work. They're not going to get those votes. So now that's why they're transformative. The Biden administration is transformative, right? Because they've given up, you know, trying to compromise, and they're just being themselves. And that's the same thing that we're doing. We've stopped compromising.
Oh, right. We've stopped trying to make the Saudis and the Yemenis and Rolling Stone happy. We are just following our moral compass.
Right.
And it points away from cholera and famine. We had to do some rejigging of it, but that's where we wound up. You know, I remind ourselves of, you know who we remind me of?
Allow myself to introduce myself.
Yes, please. Righteous Gentiles. Do you know who Righteous Gentiles were?
No.
They were the Gentiles who hid Jews during the Holocaust. And I feel like there's something there. There's some parallel between those people. And by the way, thank you. Between those people and what we're doing with the Yemenis, with the Yemeni children.
We're great, the righteous
Americans. Yeah. So anyway, as we revealed in the last thing, Rolling Stone would not refuse to grant my demand that Assad, Bashar al-Assad, be the third host. That just led to a major war between us and Rolling Stone. And then basically what we're doing is we're offering Rolling Stone another chance to have us back. I think they're getting called out on their Saudi connections. But the only way we'll come back is not only if we have Bashar, but if we have a Yemeni child.
Right.
So our two co-hosts. And before I, because I'm in touch with Bosch, he agreed to not need any, you know, to do it for free. But now right. full salary for both him and Yemeni kid. And Yemeni kid paid in full salary in Snickers.
Oh, did we, was this?
Well, we didn't specify the candy. That's right, me I being, see. I need to center them in their taste. So well, first we're going to talk to him or her. We haven't picked them out yet. Right. They're auditioning. They're sending in videos. They're sending in audition tapes.
Oh man, this is terrible.
So terrible.
It's so bad. But the funny thing is, so this is our very serious demand yeah. was that we have Asan on as the third host, and then we have a short and chubby Yemeni child.
Well, no, not chubby yet. That's how they're going to get chubby.
They're going to get chubby with the full time
salary yeah.
that Rolling Stone is going to pay us. So once we put that out there, then. It became a fact.
And like we got, you know, called out and, you know, people just wanted to document that. So Oz Kotterji, I guess he watched our show last week's show. Thank you for the clicks or the downloads. And he tweeted Katie Halper and Matt Taibbi confirmed in a recent podcast that they were both fired from Rolling Stone because of their pro Assad views and war crimes revisionism. And my response to that was me on why we left Rolling Stone. They wouldn't agree to our demand that Bashar al-Assad be our third host. And we like chubby kids so we could no longer engage in pro-Saudi propaganda. As Halper and Taibbi have confirmed they were fired over Syria.
In all seriousness, a little bit of fourth wall stuff here. This guy actually led a letter writing sort of campaign.
Yes.
Like when we first started the show, I think we had Max Blumenthal on.
Yeah, of course.
He and a whole bunch of other people were protesting so dramatically to Rolling Stone that we had this guest on that, you know, they were demanding our firing and all kinds of other things. And of course they didn't do that. So
they didn't fire us. Right.
That's just worth noting as part of the right. context of this.
Yeah. Silliness. So I guess maybe they think that Rolling Stone, it just finally caught up.
Oh, they just got the email.
Oh, they just got the email. Yeah.
That's what happened.
They had Oz blocked because he's so annoying, and then he just saw it. I'm not sure, but yeah.
So it was like a sort of a game of telephone. It got to them through some right. circuitous route.
Right.
After a year or so.
Yeah, and the hammer came down on us because of Oz. That was
right.
it. So if you guys want to hire someone to lobby for your cause, just hire this person a year earlier. I do want to say that. I appreciate that Oz put my name first in
Everybody
his tweet.
Does that.
No, not really. But I'm a little annoyed because I found out from you he follows you. He blocked you, mm-hmm. and he doesn't block me, which I'm just calling it out. Pretty sexist.
Yeah.
Like I'm not a threat, but you are.
Possibly. I don't know.
I don't know we'll
have to ask him what that's about.
Yeah. Yeah, Oz, so come on the show.
We demand that you block Katie.
Block me, you coward.
and we would never respond to something like that in an immature fashion.
Right.
So we clearly won't do something.
Yeah, no gags or anything.
No gags with the Syria people because they are quite energetic on the internet.
They are very energetic. So you tweeted about him, by the way. You wrote, Oz, your ear for satire is unfailing. If you're going to report this, do it accurately. Rolling Stone refused our request to hire Assad as a third host. And Oz writes back, sure, Matt, it's always satire. You crack jokes while your guests cover up atrocities. Rolling Stone had enough. So you crack some jokes about that, too. You're the punchline, though. Now that Matt has quote tweeted me, the mentions are swamped. The mentions are swamped. What is he talking about? Sounds like some weird
that
biblical
sounds like
shit.
Find the rationale. A
yeah,
bit.
Find the rationale. Yeah, the mentions are swamped.
That's okay,
we got to use that. That would be a great tagline for the show. Useful idiots. The mentions are swamped.
The mentions are swamped. I think that's a T-shirt idea. We got to write
definitely.
That down.
Yeah, we got to write that. The mentions are swamped with people going. Actually, Assad is innocent. You head chopper. This is the sewage he pipes straight onto Rolling Stone's platform. It's kind of a mixed metaphor, isn't it? This is the sewage he piped straight onto Rolling Stone's platform.
Yeah. Well, you could pipe something onto a platform, probably, right?
Yeah, you could. Yeah, I guess
liquid,
so. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Someone wrote a good response. If you literally believe that Katie Halps and Matt Taibbi asked us out to be the third host of Useful Idiots, I got some beachfront property in Arizona. I'll sell you. He is a head. He's not a head chopper, but he supports head chopper. Head chopping, I would say.
Oz?
Anyway. Yeah. I mean, that's where he comes down. On the Syria question.
So what are our t-shirts again? Find the rationale.
Yeah, find the rationale.
The mentions are swamped.
Yeah.
Was there a third one?
How about block Katie Halper, you coward?
Block Katie Halper, you coward. Or we could be more generous and just make block me, you coward is pretty good, right?
So I'm gonna put the t-shirt ideas list.
Yeah. So for today's show, we have an amazing guest, return guest, very inspiring, Marianne Williamson. She, of course, was a presidential candidate. She is a best-selling author. She has her own podcast, and she's also hosting the Progressive Candidates Summit. She also is now a columnist at Newsweek, which is very exciting. She's a much-needed voice. And you can find out more about her at marianne.com. And also, you can follow her on Twitter at Mar Williamson, that's M-A-R Williamson, and make sure you check out her Progressive Candidates Summit. And that's just at progressivecandidatesummit.com.
We're very pleased to introduce the woman that the AV Club calls the aunt who won't tell anyone if she catches you smoking weed before Thanksgiving dinner.
So much more than that, but yes, right, I like that. Yeah. She may smoke it with you. Well, very excited to have Marianne back on the show. Marianne Williamson, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's always fun to be with you.
And just so people know, Marianne and I did not coordinate wearing blue. we can't say the same thing for Al Jilani and Martin Smith, a callback to the journalist and the moderate rebel formerly known as terrorist, Al Jilani. And Martin Smith, who were wearing matching blazers and shirts. But anyway, if you guys want to respond and tell us if they were planned, if you guys went shopping together or it was coincidence, please do. Feel free to reach out to the show. But Marianne, on more progressive fronts, can you tell us about the Progressive Candidate Summit that you're organizing and why you're organizing it?
You know, sometimes we wonder, why can't we get more progressive policies passed in Congress? Why can't there be more policies that actually support working people in the United States? The reason is because more working people aren't in Congress. And the reason they aren't is because they aren't people who can self-fund. They aren't people who are connected in terms of corporate donations, in terms of other relationships, both professional and personal, which will help them win the primaries, much less win their races. And the establishment, even within the Democratic Party, the suppression and peripheralization of progressives is as active a trend on the level of congressional seats as it is on, obviously, on the presidential. So I have a lot of personal as well as political admiration and feeling for some of these people. The only way that we are going to be able to override the huge, gargantuan, regressive forces in this country is through a massive uprising of citizen activism. And it has to be at the polls. Now, those regressive forces know that the only place they have to worry about is the polls. That's why they are putting out all these voter suppression laws. So I want to do whatever I can. When I start my own campaign, I promised I would continue doing what I could to support these policies. And that means supporting candidates who stand for these particularly progressive policies. And particularly, as I said, people who are working class people, they do not have the kind of connections that we normally associate these days with being able to really get in there and play the game. So there are all these people around the country, and I have 16 on the list for the candidate summit. And I want to do what I can to introduce them to people, because so many times people talk about politicians like they're a different species because they don't know them enough. They don't know them as people, not only the people who are serving, some of whom are really cool people, but also the people who would if they had the kind of support. So any little thing I can do. The Candidate Summit is a way that we have 13 congressional candidates right now. Two of them are senatorial candidates. One's a gubernatorial candidate. And they're very vetted, you know, for real progressive, not only policies, but real intention to not only talk about it, but do something about it once they get there. And I will add more if, you know, if and when more present themselves and I feel I could help make a difference for them.
It could be like the opposite of an eliminationist reality TV show where you get rid of people. You could add each week.
Yeah, give a rose to the new person.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, well, if they, you know, somebody tweets, look into this person. And yeah. I was talking to Matt earlier about how Howie Klein, who writes the Down with Tyranny blog, is a bit of a mentor of mine, as are you, whether you know it or not, Matt. But Howie is someone, I was telling Matt that if you say to Howie, you mentioned out of 435 congressmen and, you know, 100 senators, I say, what about this one? He tells me, this is what they stand for. This is how they actually vote, and this is who donates to them.
Right.
So I would say to these people who wanted to be in the candidate summit, if you can get past Howie, you can get past me. Because
right.
I'm kind of like, oh, I just love who they are. Yeah. And he really talks to people.
Yeah.
So, you know, these are people who are really the real deal.
Matt, and we should get, oh, sorry.
I hope you will. If you were going to finish that sentence, get some of them. I hope you will.
And where do people go if they want to follow or?
Candidatesummit.com. CandidateSummit.com.
You should have a hashtag so people can suggest people.
Yeah, like, that would be good because right now I just look, people always suggest it. What would that hashtag?
Let's see, we can make it up now. How about Prague Summit? Someone suggested progressive candies, which is good too.
Oh, I like that. Pro.
Okay. So that's P-R-O-G C-A-N-D-I-E-S.
Okay, thank you. That's good. That's a great idea.
Discussion with what's happening in Yemen is an important one.
Oh,
the Dems are dragging their feet, though. We have to do a whole other episode on that. Yeah.
More than dragging their feet. And this is another example of what we were talking about early with Biden. He came in, he said, we're going to put the aerial support that the United States was giving to Saudi Arabia and the prosecution of the war. We're going to put that on pause. And then everybody got, oh, we're so excited. We're not going to help Saudi Arabia kill Yemeni children anymore. And then the conversation drops because, it's so exciting. Meanwhile, the blockade against Yemen, 400,000 children could die.
They denied it's even happening.
Blinken says nothing. Biden says nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And to pretend that this is not an offensive part of an offensive, that's how they get out of it. It's not offensive, but it is.
Right.
And they're also saying, we don't want to talk about it because it could be used as part of their negotiation. You shouldn't use starving children as a pawn in a negotiating factor. You know, everybody talks about, I remember during the campaign, well, you have to be an expert in this or an expert in that. Foreign policy is such an example. We have foreign policy experts. We just don't have foreign policy principles.
That's what I think the Quincy Institute is trying to do. Be a left foreign policy think tank. I mean, they are that, but they're trying to, you know, develop it.
And the Friends Committee, Hassan El Ayoub, who's the Middle East person there, they're great people. We don't lack on any level in the United States a dearth of geniuses.
Right.
I mean, we don't have a dearth of geniuses. We don't have a dearth of good ideas. We don't have a dearth of people who know how to interrupt the pattern of death, you know, the Death Star. We know we have people in every area, whether it has to do with the corruption or food supply, our water, our agriculture, military, economics, education. We have the people who would know what to do. But the status quo will not disrupt itself. There's too much money to be made. And the institutional forces of resistance to allowing the people who have great things to say and great gifts to give is stunning. And the only, as I see it, the only answer is if enough American people wake up. And I do think it's happening. It's just, will it happen fast enough?
It's funny, you know, how are they phrasing, what are they calling the kids in cages now? They have another word for it.
Migrant facilities, I think is the...
Yeah, but it's like, you know, in some ways the Dems are good at that Frank Luntzian stuff. It's just they're not good at it doing good. They're good at it for covering their asses.
Yeah, we're not supposed to call it a crisis. We're supposed to call it a challenge. I do think they have, I think they have far better intentions. They're not trying to separate children from parents as literally as a specific intentional policy of deterrence.
Right. But they are, they do use, I mean, I think we can point out both, right? Which is that they are worse. The Republicans are worse. The Democrats hide it more and are good at certain PR optics and wokeifying. Well,
the one that blows my mind is how 3 weeks ago, we were told that Kamala Harris was going to be taking charge of the root causes of the immigration crisis at the border. First of all, she hasn't gone down there, and she needs to do more than go down there. She's really in charge of the root causes. She should be taking a tour of Guatemala and Honduras and El Salvador about now. But we were told,
there's no, the root sources are things that they'll never talk about. Because that
they're clearly cognizant of it because they traded vaccines for increased enforcement in of Mexico.
Mexico and Canada, but not some of the countries that need it most. I remember in the first debate, I said something like, well, I haven't heard you guys say anything about American foreign policy in Latin America. And I remember seeing Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren look at each other like, did she just say that?
Yeah. Well, Bernie had a little, Warren not at all.
But just the fact that I said it.
Right. Yeah. No, that was great. Yeah. I mean, remember how he got dragged for going to Nicaragua?
Yeah.
So ridiculous. Anyway, how's your relationship with Bernie? Are you guys?
Well, I don't have any real relationship with him. I had a wonderful, I had been a big supporter back in 2016, very early, and there had been this scene in Los Angeles that was really, I'll tell you something you might appreciate, actually. It was very early in the 2016 situation. I had him speak. I used to do these conferences called Sister Giant Conferences. I had never met Bernie before, but I was a huge fan. And so I asked Bernie if he would speak at the conference. And his people obviously were just starting to put out their tentacles, right? So he said yes. And it was in Los Angeles. So we're in this hotel ballroom, a lot of people, there are about 1,500 people. Bernie gave this very Bernie talk. And then I had come up on the stage during they were doing the Q&A. Somebody says to him, Bernie, are you going to run for president? And Bernie says, if I do, would you be there? Would you be there? Right? Because he's checking it out. He wants to know, would you really be there? So the whole room stands up, yell, yeah, we're mad. We're not going to take it. And I say, stop. And Bernie doesn't know me, and Bernie's kind of surprised. I say, stop. I say, if I were Bernie, I would not be that excited by what you just did. You just got an adrenaline rush. It was like you threw white sugar candy bars at him. We're going to start this thing over again, please. I'd like everyone to sit down, and this is going to be done in silence, and we're going to start over. The question is this. The question is, if Bernie Sanders runs for president, will you really be there? Not will you jump up and down, yeah. Will you work it? Will you get online? Will you talk to people? Will you send money? Will you really, really, really make it happen? And please think about this. Because I only want you to say yes if it's really true. And then the way I want you to say yes, please, and this is done in silence, if you get to the point where there's a real yes for you and the level of support for Bernie Sanders to run, please stand up. And the room, at first, slowly, people would like stand up and there would be the most beautiful things. Some people would just stand up and go like this. I remember one man who went like this.
Just listening, that was the peace sign.
Whole room stood up. The whole room, it was like, but they got it. Like, and it was so profound, actually. And I remember I actually have a photograph of Bernie looking back at me.
Yeah, he must have been like, what the hell are you doing, Marianne?
No, he got it. The whole room got it. The whole room got it. It was very profound. And then something else he did. When I was first running, like the first debate, Jane kind of looked at me. Like, why are you here?
Really?
And you could tell his body, but she did not remain that way. Please don't get me wrong. They just didn't understand. They were not rude. They just didn't get it. The more they heard me speak, the more they changed. And then one day, when it got really bad, when the attacks on me, when the crystal lady, woo-woo lady, let's make fun of Marianne Williamson today. Let's lie about Marianne Williamson today, was at such height. It was the New Hampshire Democratic Party convention. And I was, there were a lot of people there, and I was walking down the hall, and Bernie was coming towards me, and he was surrounded by a real entourage. And I said, "Hi, Bernie." And he didn't hear me, but apparently somebody must have told him, "Oh, we just passed Marianne Williamson." He made a U-turn, a quick U-turn. He took me under his shoulder real quick. He said, "Are you okay? Don't let that liberal bullshit get to you."
That's so great.
That is fantastic. Wow. All right. That's our viral clip right there.
Yeah, that's the mensch. The mensch.
That's the mensch. And he hugged me so tight. Don't let that liberal bullshit get to you.
Great. Well, I was going to ask, what was the big, your big takeaway or lesson from the run, your presidential run? But that sounds like a pretty good one.
I should have fought back. I should have fought harder. Every time they wrote did an article, I should have gotten on Facebook Live.
I heard you on the Crystal, Kyle and Friends podcast talk about how that was a big mistake that you made. Well, you said that you got bad advice on it. You said that in your gut, you knew.
Well, listen, I believe I'm 100% responsible.
Sure.
I was told, don't speak to it because that brings attention to it, which is ridiculous because the attention was there.
Right. No, but I think that is a calculation that's sometimes hard to make. Like, do you bring it up? It's I think there must be some math on it. There must be some formula, right? When it gets to this level of exposure.
It was so ubiquitous. And right. I can't be sure it would have made that much difference, but it was successful at making certain people think they were too smart to come hear me.
Right.
People who came to hear me, as you know, Matt, you were the day we met in Iowa, people who actually came to hear me heard something different than they had led to believe that they would hear me, and
Absolutely.
Were very acknowledging of it, and sometimes in very kind of emotional ways.
How much of that, of those attacks, do you think were organic, and how much of it was just inertia with the way the press behaves, or how much it was like astroturfing? I mean, have you parsed all that out? And in the moment, was it just overwhelming? Like, you just weren't prepared for that level of attack?
Well, it was calculated, mm-hmm. Smear. There was nothing organic about it. It started 3 days later. I think Perez lifts an eyebrow and Anderson Cooper gets on and handles it. So within 3 days, the same words were everywhere. The same words. It's like something out of the Middle Ages and the witches, right? She's dangerous. She's crazy. I never made an anti-vax statement, but I questioned mandatories, and in a crude way, I admit that. I mean, there were certainly little things that you could take out of context or that I spoke in a way that I shouldn't have. Nothing that was fundamental to my message about any of those things, whether it had to do with big pharmaceutical companies, antidepressants, vax, nothing would I take back what my actual message was. But if somebody takes a little sentence and is willing to do what they're willing to do, yes, I was appalled by it because I found how many people really didn't want to hear what the truth was. Or if, once again, the main problem was people thinking they were too smart to even come hear me. So if you don't have a chance to really say what you believe, and yeah, it was very painful, obviously. It was very painful. But you know what? I want to tell you something about men and women that I think is interesting.
Sure. Yeah.
I regret getting out when I got out because I could have stayed through New Hampshire. And I think some people would have been surprised by some things. But I have to tell you, there was a difference between what my male friends said to me and what my female friends said to me. There was definitely a gender difference. My female friends were, "Oh, you're in such pain. Let it go." My male friends were, "Do not get out. There's still time on the clock. Joe Lewis regretted whoever Joe, I don't know sports, but they were all using sports analogies. He regretted till the day he died. He didn't get up one last time." And I've thought a lot about that. And I needed more people to say, "Get up and get out there and fight." So much of my life had been about becoming gentler. I wasn't prepared for something where I needed to be tougher.
Wow. Oh, that's a great message.
Yeah.
All right.
All these sports, and I said, "I don't know the game." But they kept telling me, "You had this
right,
many
exactly,
feet from
yeah.
the yard line."
Yeah.
"I don't know this."
You're like, "I don't know anything about
another analogy, please."
Yeah. Well, I wonder if it's also because women are just used to that kind of treatment. And so they're more resigned. and men were kind of outraged on your behalf.
That's why I'm so, you know, now I know how to just block somebody, you know. Right. Oh, you hate me?
Right.
Oh, darling.
Right.
Well, I mean, not to pay a compliment to the men, but that was something that Trump clearly figured out about how the internet works,
right,
which is that when they throw something at you, you just throw it back at them, yeah, and just pretend it didn't happen. And right.
Well, the way the media works, as you know, sometimes the truth is not what they're interested in.
Right,
and it was so interesting with reporters and interviewers how, and I'm sure that you had some of this experience when you heard me in Iowa, you didn't know what to think. But you're an ethical journalist, so you reported on what you actually saw. And you, when you're on television and you're interviewed by people, it's so interesting because you can see it in their eyes when they see you're not who they might have thought you were. It was interesting. Some people were like, pleased. Well, how nice.
Right.
People, it's almost like, I'm sticking to my story, bitch, no matter what you
think. Or they have the story written already.
Yeah, it's already written.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Already written.
Wanted to ask you a couple things. What you're up to with your podcast, which is great. I want to know what you wanted to tell people about that, why you started it, what you've been focusing on. Also, the role of your father in your life, and specifically that country he took you guys to. I think a lot of people may not know that story. It's amazing. And if you remember, because you talk so much about the assassinations of the Kennedys, of Martin Luther King, Malcolm X. If you remember where you were when you heard about those.
I do. The podcast, I've been doing a podcast. There was, you know, I have two, well, within me, they're integrated. And I think within the society, they're more and more integrated. But in the past, they have not been so integrated in the society. Those of us who are interested in personal transformation and those who are interested in political transformation. And on the podcast that I've been doing, there has been, I have felt some pressure to keep it about the more internal transformation. Whereas I also want to do a podcast about the, I want to have Arkin on, I want to have Similar on, I want to have, you know, there's been a real resistance to some of the political stuff that I have to put aside a little bit, do other stuff. I'm hoping actually.
Yeah, James Cameron, right?
Yeah, which was great. He actually contacted me. So I am kind of going to be redoing the podcast in some way so I can do both ands a little bit more. In terms of my father, yeah, my father was, you know, he was very much an armchair revolutionary. He used to read I.F. Stone the day that Kennedy was assassinated. He said, the CIA did this, I'm telling you, the CIA did this with Curtis LeMay. And in 1965, I came home from seventh grade one day. And my father, by the way, was a very well-known and very powerful immigration lawyer. And my brother's an immigration lawyer. So I grew up in that world. So I came home from the seventh grade and my social studies teacher had said, if we didn't fight on the shores of Hawaii, no, if we didn't fight in Vietnam, we'd be fighting on the shores of Hawaii, which was called the domino theory, right? So my father jumped up and he said, sweetheart, that was my mother, get the visas, we're going to Vietnam. Those goddamn bastards aren't going to eat my children's brains and goddamn military stuff. You know? And so my mother, who is just this really traditional, lovely woman, oh, Sam, what will the kids become? You know, and we went to Vietnam. We went to Saigon because he wanted us to see bullet holes and he wanted us to see damage and he wanted us to see what the goddamn U.S. got, you know, had done. But, and I was in behind the Iron Curtain. It was during the time behind the Iron Curtain in a sense. But my father, I want to be very clear here. You know, my father fought in World War II. My father was, in my mind, the depth of patriotic American. We had an American flag in the front yard. It was because he was so offended by what those certain things represented. To the day he died, if you ask my father who he voted for, he said FDR. He'd grown up in in real poverty, and Franklin Roosevelt was his. So that's the kind that my father was. I remember it was on April 4th, 1968. I was sitting in the den. The TV at that time, breaking news meant something. I know you know that from your own childhood with your father. Today it means nothing. But there was a time when breaking news meant something really serious had happened. My mother was in the kitchen making dinner. and breaking news was on that Martin Luther King had been killed. And a few minutes later, my mother was just standing there stricken, watching the seeing the television. And very shortly, my father, he would come in through the, we called it the utility room today, usually mud room. And I ran up to him, Daddy, somebody shot and killed Martin Luther King. I was born in 52, so 16 years old. And my father looked out into the distance and he said, "Those bastards." And I remember when he said "those bastards," looking out into the distance, I think my first question was, "Do you know who killed him, Daddy?" Of course, he didn't know who killed him, but he knew who killed him. He knew what. Wow. And I remember also when Bobby Kennedy was killed, and we were living in Houston, which was 2 hours later. He was killed in Los Angeles. And I remember falling asleep as I couldn't stay up, hoping he would survive, of course, and waking up to the news that he had died. That famous press conference with Mankiewicz, right, Joe Mankiewicz?
Right. Well, Marianne, thank you so much for coming on. Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. Thank you. And
I just want to say, may I say one little thing?
Of course, yeah.
Every time when you know someone who has died, every year it gets a little better. For myself, and I think many people of my generation, every year the anniversary of the assassination of Bobby Kennedy and Martin Luther King, it gets worse. Because everything we feared would happen when they died has happened. And those who killed them were very successful at stopping the things they were intending to stop. And that's what I hope. And I think that many people my age who do remember want to feel that before we die, we can play whatever little part we might be able to play in resurrecting the dreams that were our dreams when we were young, and the thought that we might die knowing that we didn't really do that is actually scarier to us than the idea that they might kill us if we do. Because when they killed the students at Kent State, that was the real message there. Those assassinations were loud unspoken messages to a generation that there would be no further protest. And those kids at Kent State, that was really bringing it home. That was then and this is now. But the through line is very profound.
I think you've already done certainly your part to help put things back together. Yes,
thank you.
In some ways. So yeah.
Well, I have great admiration for both of you, and I learned from both of you, and I love both of you. So thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, and we didn't even touch the spiritual realm, but I'm going to try to convince Matt to do A Course in Miracles with me.
I do those daily lessons every morning. Yeah. I'll be glad to send them to you.
Yeah, we should do it, Matt.
All right, you're on.
Yeah, all right. I need an accountability buddy.
I'll send them if you want them.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Excellent. Thanks all right, well, thank you so much, Marianne.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much time.
Thank you.
Much good luck at the summit.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
He's very smart, and it's funny. You know, and I wrote this last, when she ran for president, she is completely different from what the press wrote up about her, actually, and she is very serious, has a lot of really interesting ideas, and
in fact, why don't we let's tell people why we really broke it off with Rolling Stone. A certain journalist at Rolling Stone wrote a very unfair piece. They wrote an article about Marianne Williamson, and it was not flattering, and we said you delete that article
across this line. You do not.
Well, we gave them the Oz, we gave them the grace period. We gave them a year.
Right.
And if they didn't delete that article about Marianne Williamson, we said we quit. So that's the real reason.
That is
the reason of the week. So guys, here's what you need to do. If you want to see the rest of that interview, if you want to see my special interview with Rania Kallik, please go to usefulidiots.substack.com. Again, that's usefulidiots.substack.com, and you get great bonus content. We're going to start doing polls. We're going to start getting feedback from you. We're going to let you give us feedback if you are a paying listener, viewer. We're going to let you, for real, though, have this extended interview with Marianne Williamson.
There are some pretty funny comments on the right that they're basically telling us how much we suck.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, are they paying us?
I don't think so.
Oh, well, if they pay us, then we'll read them. If you want us to read your hate mail, that's another thing we're going to do. That if you want us to read your hate mail, become members of Useful Idiots. Or we'll put it a Venmo or PayPal so you don't have to support us on the regular. But what should we make people charge for them, for us to read their hate mail to us?
Like $4.
Ten.
Ten? All right. Yeah. $10.
Yeah. $10. And we'll
I'd read some hate mail for $10.
Yeah.
Well, we're splitting it though, so.
Let's start with 33. 10. No, let's start with 10. 33. Yeah. We'll start with 10 and then we'll see how it goes.
All right.
All right. Thank you so much. Make sure you check us out on YouTube. You can subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. You can also subscribe at Substack. So basically for all your needs, fears, wants, everything, just go to usefulidiots.substack.com.